Couldn't think. Couldn't do anything but taste and touch and yield. And yet, he found words. Found language again, long enough to ask, "Have you ever?" "Yes." The word was a rough pant. "Once." Kaol shoved against the ripple of darkness, the line on that throat. He only kissed it instead. Licked it. Then asked against her skin, his mouth skirting up her jaw, "Do you want to..."
"Keep going."
But he made himself pause. Made himself rise to look at her face. His hands on her sleek thighs, and her hand still gripping him, stroking him. "Yes, then?" Irene's eyes were gold flame.
"Yes,"
she breathed. She leaned up, kissed him gently. Not lightly, but sweetly. Openly.
"Yes."
A shudder racked through him at the words, and he gripped her thigh right where it met her hip. Irene released him to lift her hips, dragging herself over him, feeling him, with only the thin gossamer panel of her gown between them. Nothing beneath. Kaol slid it to the side, bunching the material at her waist. He dipped his head, eager to look his fill, then to touch and taste, and learn what made Irene Towers lose control entirely.
"Later,"
Irene begged hoarsely.
"Later."
He couldn't bring himself to deny her anything. This woman who held everything he was. All he had left in her beautiful hands. So Kaol removed his shirt, his pants following with a few trickier maneuvers. Then he removed that dress of hers, leaving it in scraps on the floor beside the bed. Until Irene only wore that locket. Until Kaol surveyed every inch of her, and found himself unable to breathe.
"I will cherish it always,"
Kaol whispered, as he slid into her, slow and deep. Pleasure rippled down his spine.
"No matter what may befall the world."
Irene kissed his neck, his shoulder, his jaw.
"No matter the oceans, or mountains, or forests in the way."
Kaol held Irene's stare as he stilled, letting her adjust, letting himself adjust to the sensation that the entire axis of the world had shifted. Looking into those eyes of hers, swimming with brightness, he wondered if she felt it too. But Irene kissed him again, in answer and silent demand. And as Kaol began to move in her, he realized that here, amongst the dunes and stars, here, in the heart of a foreign land, here, with her, he was home. Chapter 46. It broke her, and unmade her, and rebirthed her. Sprawled over Kaol's chest hours later, listening to the thump of his heartbeat, Irene still did not have words for what had passed between them. Not the physical joining, not the repeated bouts of it, but simply the sense of him, of belonging. She'd never known it could be like that. Her quick, unimpressive, and only brush with sex had been just last autumn, and had left her in no hurry to seek it out again. But this... he'd made sure she found her pleasure, repeatedly, before he ever found his own. And beyond that... the things he made her feel. Not just as a result of his body, but who he was. Irene pressed an idle kiss to the sculpted muscle of his chest, savoring the fingers he still trained down her spine, over and over. It was safety, and joy, and comfort, and knowing that no matter what befell them, he would not balk, he would not break. Irene nuzzled her face against him. It was dangerous, she knew, to feel such things. She'd known what lay in her eyes when he'd looked at her. The heart she'd offered up without saying as much. But seeing that locket that he'd somehow found and had been so thoughtful about. Her initials were beautifully done. But the mountains and waves. It was stunning work, done by a master jeweler in Antica. I didn't do it on my own.
Irene murmured against his skin.
Hmm?
She ran her fingers over the grooves of Kaol's stomach, before rising onto an elbow to study his face in the dimness. The lanterns had long since burned out, and silence had settled over the camp, replaced by the buzz and hum of beetles in the palm trees.
Getting here. The mountains, yes. But the seas. Someone helped me.
Alertness filled those sated eyes.
Oh?
Irene plucked up the locket. Between bouts of lovemaking, when she'd gone to move his cane within easy reach of the bed, she'd slid the small note inside. The fit had been perfect.
I was stuck in Inish, with no way of leaving. And one night, this stranger appeared at the inn. She was everything I was not. Everything I'd forgotten. She was waiting for a boat, and during the 3 nights she was there, I think she wanted the lowlifes to try to rob her. She was spoiling for a fight, but she kept her distance. I was left with cleaning up alone that night.
Kaol's hand tensed on her back, but he said nothing.
And mercenaries who had given me a hard time earlier that evening found me in the alley.
He went utterly still.
I know they wanted to.
She shook off the icy grip of horror, even all these years later.
The woman, girl, whatever she was.
She interrupted before they could so much as try.
She dealt with them. And when she finished, she taught me how to defend myself.
His hand began stroking again.
So that's how you learned.
She ran a hand over the scar on her neck.
But other mercenaries, friends of the earlier ones, returned. One held a knife to my throat to get her to drop her weapons. She refused to do so. So I used what she'd taught me to disarm and disable the man.
He blew out an impressed breath that ruffled her hair.
To her, it was a test. She'd been aware of the second group circling and told me she wanted me to have some controlled experience. I'd never heard of anything more ridiculous.
The woman had either been brilliant or insane. Likely both.
But she told me. Told me it was better to be suffering in the streets of Antica than in Inish. And that if I wanted to come here, I should go. That if I wanted something, I should take it. She told me to fight for my miserable life.
Irene brushed the sweat-damp hair from his eyes.
I patched her up, and she went on her way. And when I got back to my room, she had left me a bag of gold, and a golden brooch with a ruby the size of a robin's egg, to pay for my passage here, and any tuition at the Torre.
He blinked in surprise. Irene whispered, voice breaking.
I think she was a god. I don't know who would do that. I have a little gold left, but the brooch, I never sold it. I still have it.
He frowned at the necklace, as if he'd misjudged its size. Irene added,
that's not what I keep in my pocket.
His brows rose.
I left Inish that morning. I took the gold and the brooch and got on a ship here. So, I crossed mountains alone, yes, but the narrow sea.
Irene traced the waves on the locket.
I crossed because of her. I teach the women at the Torre because she told me to share the knowledge with any women who would listen. I teach it because it makes me feel like I'm paying her back, in some small way.
Irene ran her thumb over the initials on the front.
I never learned her name. She only left a note with 2 lines. For wherever you need to go, and then some. The world needs more healers. That's what I keep in my pocket. That little scrap of paper. What's now in here?
Irene tapped the locket.
I know it's silly, but it gave me courage. When things were hard, it gave me courage. It still does.
Kaol swept the hair from her brow and kissed it.
There is nothing silly
about it. And whoever she is, I will be forever grateful.
Me too,
Irene whispered, as he slid his mouth over her jaw and her toes curled.
Me too.
Chapter 47. The pass between the twin peaks of Dagul was larger than it looked. It went on and on, a maze of jagged, towering rock. Nezrin and Sartak did not dare stop. Webs sometimes blocked their way, or hovered above. But still they charged onward, seeking any sort of path upward, to where Kadara might pluck them into the sky. For down here, with the cramped, narrow walls of the pass, the Rook could not reach them. If they were to stand a chance of being rescued, they'd have to find a way up. Nezrin didn't dare let Falcon out. Not yet. Not when so many things could still go wrong. And letting the spiders know what sort of card they had up their sleeve. No. Not yet would she risk using him. But the temptation gnawed on her. The walls were smooth, ill-fitted for climbing. And as they hurried through the pass hour after hour, Sartak's wet, labored breaths echoed off the rock. He was in no state to climb. He was barely able to stay upright or grip his sword. Nezrin kept an arrow knocked, ready to fly as they rounded corner after corner, glancing up every now and then. The pass was so tight in spots that they had to squeeze through, the sky a watery trickle high above. They did not speak, did not dare do more than breathe as they kept their steps light. It made no difference. Nezrin knew it made little difference. A trap had been laid for them, and they had fallen into it. The Karen Queen knew where they were likely following at their leisure, herding them along. It had been hours since they'd last heard the boom of Kadara's wings. And the light, it was beginning to fade. Once darkness fell, once the way became too dark to manage. Nezrin pressed a hand to Falcon, still in her pocket. When the night settled upon the pass, she decided, then she'd use him. They pushed through a particularly tight passage between two near-kissing boulders, Sartak grunting behind her.
We have to be nearing the end, he breathed.
She didn't tell him that she doubted the spiders were stupid enough to allow them to walk right out of the other side of the pass and into Kadara's awaiting talons. If the injured Rook could even manage their weight. Nezrin just pushed onward, the pass becoming a fraction wider, counting her breaths. They were likely some of her last. Thinking that way helped no one and nothing. She'd stared down death this summer, when that wave of glass had come crashing toward her. Had stared it down and been saved. Perhaps she would be lucky again, too. Sartak stumbled out behind her, breathing hard.
Water.
They desperately needed water and bandages for his wounds. If the spiders did not find them, then lack of water in the arid pass might very well kill them first, long before any help arrived from the Aridin Rukin. Nezrin forced one step in front of another, the path narrowing again, the rock as tight as a vise. She twisted sideways, edging through, her sword scraping. Sartak grunted, then let out a pained curse.
I'm stuck.
She found him indeed wedged behind her, the bulk of his broad chest and shoulders pinned. He shoved himself forward, blood leaking from his wounds as he pushed and pulled.
Stop,
she ordered. Stop. Wriggle back out if you can. There was no other way through and nothing to climb over. But if they removed his weapons... His dark eyes met hers. She saw the words forming. You keep going. Sartak, she breathed. They heard it then. Claws clicking on stone, skittering along. Many of them. Too many. Coming from behind, closing in. Nezrin grabbed the prince's hand, tugging. Push, she panted. Push! He grunted in pain,
the veins in his neck bulging as he tried to squeeze through, his boots scraping on the loose rock. Nezrin dug her own feet in, gritting her teeth as she hauled him forward. Click, click, click.
Harder, she gasped.
Sartak angled his head, shoving against the rock that held him.
What a fine morsel, our guest,
hissed a soft female voice.
So large he cannot even fit through the passage. How we shall feast.
Nezrin heaved and heaved, her grip treacherously slippery with sweat and blood from both of them. But she clamped onto his wrist hard enough that she felt bones shift beneath.
Go,
he whispered, straining to push through.
You run.
Falcon was shifting in her pocket, trying to emerge. But with the rock pressing on her chest, the passage was too tight for even him to poke out his head.
A pretty pair,
that female continued.
How her hair shines like a moonless night. We shall take you both back to our home, our honored guests.
A sob clawed its way up Nezrin's throat.
Please,
she begged, scanning the rock high above them, the lip into the upper reaches of the narrow pass, the curving horns of the peaks, tugging and tugging on Sartak's arm.
Please,
she begged them, begged anyone. But Sartak's face went calm, so calm. He stopped pushing, stopped trying to haul himself forward. Nezrin shook her head, pulling on his arm. He did not move, not an inch. His dark eyes met hers. There was no fear in them. Sartak said to her, clear and steady,
I heard the spy's stories of you, the fearless Belruni woman in Otterland's empire, Neith's arrow, and I knew.
Nezrin sobbed, tugging and tugging. Sartak smiled at her, gently, sweetly, in a way she had not yet seen.
I loved you before I ever set eyes on you, he said.
Please,
Nezrin wept. Sartak's hand tightened on hers.
I wish we'd had time.
A hiss behind him, a rising bulk of shining black. Then the prince was gone, ripped from her hands, as if he had never been. Nezrin could barely see through her tears as she edged and squeezed along the pass, as she hurtled over rocks, arms straining, feet unfaltering. Keep going. The words were a song in her blood, her bones, as she plunged onward. Keep going and get out. Find help. But the passage at last opened into a wider chamber. Nezrin staggered from the vise that had held her, panting. Sartak's blood still coating her palms, his face still swimming before her. The path curved ahead, and she stumbled for it, hand flying to where Falcon now poked his head out. She sobbed at the sight of him, sobbed as the clicking and hissing again began to sound behind her, closing in once more. It was over. It was done. And she had as good as killed him. She should have never left, should have never done any of it. She sprinted toward the curve in the pass, chips of shale scattering from beneath her boots.
Take you both back to our home.
Alive. The spider had talked as if they would be taken alive to their lair, for a brief window before the feasting began. And if she had spoken true? Nezrin slapped a hand over a wriggling falcon, earning a squeak of outrage. But she said, soft as wind through the grass,
Not yet. Not yet, my friend.
And as Nezrin slowed her steps, as she stopped entirely, she whispered her plan to him. The Karen Kui did not try to hide their arrival. Hissing and laughing, they skittered around the corner of the pass, and halted when they beheld Nezrin panting on her knees, blood from slices in her arms, her collarbone, filling the tight air with her scent. She saw them note the sprayed shale around her, flecks of her blood on it, as if she had taken a bad fall, as if she could no longer go on. Clicking,
chattering to one another. They surrounded her. A wall of ancient reeking limbs and fangs and swollen bulbous abdomens. And eyes. More eyes than she could count, her reflection in all of them. Her trembling was not faked.
Pity it did not give much sport, one pouted. We shall have it later, another replied.
Nesrin shook harder. One sighed.
How fresh her blood smells, how clean.
Please, she begged.
The Karen Kui just laughed. Then the one behind her pounced, pinning her to the shale, rocks slicing her face, her hands. Nesrin screamed against the claws that dug into her back. Screamed, as she managed to look over her shoulder, to see those spinnerets hovering above her legs. To see the silk that shot from them, ready to be woven, to wrap her tightly. Chapter 48 Nesrin awoke to sharp biting. She jerked upright, a scream on her lips. It died when she felt the little teeth biting at her neck, her ear, nipping her awake. Falcon. She winced, her head throbbing, bile surged up her throat. Not biting at her head, but the silk that bound her body, the thick strands reeking, and the cave she was in. No, not cave, but a covered section of the pass, dimly illuminated by the moon. She scanned the dark to either side, the arch of stone above them no more than 30 feet wide, keeping her breathing steady. There, sprawled on the ground nearby, covered foot to neck with silk, his face crusted with blood, eyes closed. Sartak's chest rose and fell. Nesrin shuddered with the force of keeping her sob contained, as Falcon slithered down her body, chewing at the strands with his vicious teeth. She didn't need to tell the shifter to hurry. She scanned the empty passage, scanned the dim stars beyond. Wherever they were, it was different here. The rock smooth, polished, and carved. Countless carvings had been etched in the space, ancient and primitive. Falcon chewed and chewed, the silk snapping strand by strand.
Sartak,
Nesrin dared to whisper.
Sartak!
The prince did not stir. Clicking sounded from beyond the archway.
Stop,
she murmured to Falcon. Stop. The shifter halted his path down her back, clung to her leathers as a shadow darker than the night emerged from around the corner behind them. Or ahead. She had no idea where True North lay. If they were still within the pass itself, or atop another peak. The spider was slightly larger than the others, her blackness deeper, as if the starlight itself was loath to touch her. The Karen Kui halted, as she noted Nesrin staring at her. Nesrin controlled her breathing, rallying her mind to come up with something to buy them time, buy Sartak and Falcon time.
You are the ones who have been poking about in forgotten places,
the spider said in Halha. Her voice beautiful, lyrical. Nesrin swallowed once, twice, trying and failing to moisten her paper-dry tongue. She managed to rasp.
Yes. What is it that you seek?
Falcon pinched her back in warning and order. Keep her distracted while he chewed. Nesrin blurted,
We were paid by a merchant. Who traded with your sisters to the north, the Stygian spiders.
Sisters,
the spider hissed.
Our blood kin they may be, but no true sisters of the soul. Gentle-hearted fools, trading with mortals. Trading when we were born to devour you.
Nesrin's hands shook behind her back.
That is why he sent us. He was unimpressed by them. Sis said they did not live up to the legend.
She had no idea what was spewing from her mouth.
So he wished to see you, See if you might trade. Falcon brushed her arm again in quiet comfort.
Trade? We have nothing to trade beyond the bones of your kin.
There is no spider silk here?
No. Though we delight in tasting your dreams, your years, before we finish with you.
Had they already done so for Sartak? Was that why he did not stir? Nezrin forced herself to ask as the threads behind her snapped free so slowly.
Then what is it you do here?
The spider took a step forward, and Nezrin braced herself. But the spider lifted a thin, clawed leg and pointed to one of the polished, carved walls.
We wait.
And as her eyes at last adjusted to the dimness, Nezrin saw what the spider pointed to. A carving of an archway. A gate. And a cloaked figure standing within it. She squinted, straining to make out who stood there.
Who do you wait for?
Hulan had said the Vog had once passed through here. The spider brushed aside the dirt crusted over the figure, revealing long, flowing hair etched there. And what she'd thought to be a cloak. It was a dress.
Our queen,
the spider said.
We wait for her dark majesty to return at last.
Not Erewhon?
Servants to a dark crown, Hulan had said. The spider spat, the venom landing near Sartak's covered feet.
Not him, never him.
Then who?
We wait for the queen of the Vog.
The spider purred, rubbing against the carving.
Who in this world calls herself Maeve.
Chapter 49. Queen of the Vog.
Maeve is queen of the Fae,
Nezrin countered carefully. The spider chuckled, low and wicked.
So she has made them believe.
Think. What a mighty and powerful queen she must be,
Nezrin stammered,
to rule both.
Falcon furiously chewed, each strand slowly, so slowly, yielding.
Will you tell me the tale?
The spider studied her, those depthless eyes like pits of hell.
It will not buy you your life, mortal.
I know.
She shook further, the words tumbling out.
But stories. I have always loved stories. Of these lands especially. Windseeker, my mother called me. Because I was always drifting where the wind tugged me. Always dreaming of those stories. And here, the wind has taken me. So I would hear one last tale, if you allow it. Before I meet my end.
The spider remained quiet for a heartbeat. Another. Then she settled herself beneath the carving of the archway. The word gate.
Consider it a gift for your boldness in even asking.
Nezrin said nothing, heart thundering through every part of her body.
Long ago,
the spider said softly in that beautiful voice.
In another world, another lifetime, there existed a land of dark and cold and wind. Ruled by three kings, masters of shadow and pain. Brothers. The world had not always been that way. Had not been born that way. But they waged a mighty war. A war to end all wars. And those three kings conquered it. Turned it into a wasteland. A paradise for those who had dwelled in darkness. For 1,000 years they ruled, equal in power. Their sons and daughters spread throughout the land to ensure their continued dominion. Until a queen appeared. Her power a new dark song in the world. Such wondrous things she could do with her power.
Such horrible, wondrous things. The spider sighed.
They each desired her, those kings. Pursued her, wooed her. But she only deigned to ally with one. The strongest of them.
Erewhon, Nezrin murmured.
No. Orcas, eldest of the Volk kings. They wed, but Maeve was not content. Restless. Our queen spent long hours pondering the riddles of the world, of other worlds. And with her gifts, she found a way to look, to pierce the veil between worlds, to see realms of green, of light and song.
The spider spat, as if such a thing were abhorrent.
And one day, when Orcus was gone to see his brothers, she took a path between realms, stepped beyond her world, and into the next.
Nezrin's blood went cold.
How? She had watched, had learned of such rips between worlds. A door that could open and close at random, or if one knew the right words.
The spider's dark eyes gleamed.
We came with her. Her beloved handmaidens. We stepped with her into this place. To this very spot.
Nezrin glanced at the polished stone. Even Falcon seemed to pause to do the same.
She bade us stay, to guard the gate, lest anyone should pursue her. For she had decided she did not wish to go back to her husband, her world. So she went. And we only heard whisperings through our sisters and smaller kin, carried on the wind.
The spider fell silent.
Nezrin pushed. What did you hear? That Orcus arrived, his brothers in tow. That Orcus had learned of his wife's leaving and discovered how she'd done it. Went beyond what she'd done and found a way to control the gate between worlds. Made keys to do so, shared with his brothers. Three keys for the three kings. They went from world to world, opening gates as they willed it, sweeping in their armies and laying waste to those realms as they hunted for her. Until they reached this world.
Nezrin could barely draw breath to ask,
And they found her?
No, the spider said. Something like a smile in its voice. For her dark majesty had left these mountains, had found another land, and prepared herself well. She knew that one day she would be found, and planned to hide within plain sight. So she did. She came across a lovely, long-lived people, near immortals themselves, ruled over by two sister queens. Mab and Mora. Holy gods.
And using her powers, she ripped into their minds. Made them believe they had a sister. An eldest sister to rule with them. Three queens. For the three kings that might one day come. When they returned to their palace, she tore into the minds of all those who dwelt there too. And any who came. Planting the thought that a third queen had always existed, always ruled. If they somehow resisted her power, she found ways to end them.
A wicked chuckle. Nezrin had heard the legends of Maeve's dark, unnamed power. A darkness that could devour the stars. That Maeve had never revealed a fae form, only that deadly darkness. And she had lived far beyond the lifespan of any known fae. Lived so long that the only comparable lifespan...
Erewhon.
A Volg lifespan. For a Volg queen. The spider again paused. Falcon had nearly reached her hands, but still not enough to free them. Nezrin asked,
So the Volg kings arrived, but did not know who faced them in the war?
Precisely. A delighted purr. Disguised in a fey body, they did not recognize her, the fools. But she used it against them. Knew how to defeat them, how their armies worked. And when she realized what they had done to arrive here, the keys they possessed, she wanted them. To banish them, kill them, and to use the keys as she saw fit within this world. And others. So she took them. Snuck in and took them, surrounding herself with fey warriors, so others might not ask just how she knew so many things. Oh, the clever queen claimed it was from communing with the spirit world. But she knew. She had run those war camps, knew how the kings worked. So she stole the keys, managed to send two of those kings back, Orcus one of them. And before she could go after the final king, the youngest one who loved his brothers so very deeply, the keys were taken from her.
A hiss. By Brannan,
Nezrin breathed. Yes, the Fire King. He saw the darkness in her, but did not recognize it. He wondered, suspected. But all he'd known of the Volg, our people, were their male soldiers, their grunts and princes and kings. He did not know that a female, how different, how extraordinary a female Volg is. Even he was tricked by her. She found paths into his mind to keep him from truly realizing it. Another soft, lovely laugh. Even now, when all should be clear to his meddlesome spirit. Even now, he does not know. To his oncoming doom. Yes, to his doom. And the others. Nausea roiled through her.
Aelin.
Aelin's doom. But while he did not guess correctly about our queen's origins, he still knew that his fire... She greatly feared his fire, as all true Volg do. Nezrin tucked away that colonel. He left, building his kingdom far away. And she built her defenses, too. So many clever defenses, should Erewhon rise again and realize that the queen he'd sought for his brother, conquered worlds to find, was here all along. That she had built armies of fey and would let them battle each other. A spider in a web. That's what Maeve was. Falcon reached Nezrin's hands, chewing through the silk there. Sartak remained unconscious, so perilously close to the spider.
So, you have waited these thousands of years for her to return to these mountains?
She ordered us to hold the pass, to guard the rip in the world. So we have, and so we will, until she summons us to her side once more. Nezrin's head spun.
Maeve.
She'd think on it later, if they lived through this. She flicked her fingers at Falcon, signaling him. Silently, keeping to the shadows, the shifters scuttled into the dark. And now you know how the Black Watch came to dwell here. The spider rose with a mighty heave. I hope it was a fitting final tale for you, Wind Seeker. Nezrin opened her mouth as the spider advanced, rotating her wrists behind her back.
Sister.
A female voice hissed from the darkness beyond.
Sister. A word.
The spider halted. Pivoting her bulbous body toward the archway entrance.
What?
A beat of fear.
There is a problem, sister. A threat.
The spider scuttled toward her kin, snapping.
Tell me. Rooks on the northern horizon, 20 at least.
The spider hissed,
Guard the mortals. I shall deal with the birds.
Clicking legs, Shale shifting all around her. Nezrin's heart hammered as she flexed her aching fingers.
Sartak,
she breathed. His eyes flicked open across the way. Alert. Calm. The other spider crawled in, smaller than her leader. Sartak tensed, shoulders straining as if he'd try to burst from the silk that held him. But the spider only whispered,
Hurry.
Chapter 50 Sartak sagged at Falcon's voice as it came from the Karen Kui's hideous mouth. Nezrin hauled her hands free from the webbing, swallowing her grunt of pain as the fibers tore at her skin. Falcon's mouth and tongue had to be aching. She glanced at the spider hovering over Sartak, slicing through the silk binding the prince with slashes of the claws. Indeed, where those pincers waved, blood leaked out.
Quickly,
the shifter whispered.
Your weapons are in the corner there.
She could just make out the faint gleam of starlight on the curve of her bow, along the naked silver of her Asterian short sword. Falcon cut through Sartak's bindings, and the prince sprang free, shoving off the webbing. He swayed as he stood, bracing a hand on the stone. Blood. There was so much blood all over him. But he rushed to her, ripping at the threads still covering her feet.
Are you hurt?
Faster,
Falcon said, glancing to the archway entrance beneath.
It won't take her long to realize no one's coming.
Nezrin's feet came free, and Sartak hauled her up.
Did you hear what she said about Maeve?
Oh, I heard,
Sartak breathed, as they rushed to their weapons. He handed her the bow and quiver, the fey blade. Grabbed his own Asterian daggers as he hissed to Falcon.
Which way?
The shifter scuttled forward, past the carving of Maeve.
Here. There is a slope upward. We're just on the other side of the pass. If we can get up high...
Have you seen Kadara?
No, the shifter said. But...
They didn't wait to hear the rest as they crept on silent feet from the archway, entering the starlight-filled pass beyond. Sure enough, a rough slope of loose stone rose from the ground, as if it were a path into the stars themselves. They'd made it halfway up the treacherous slope, Falcon a dark shadow at their backs, when a shriek rose from the mountain beyond. But the skies were empty, no sign of Kadara.
Fire,
Nezrin breathed, as they hurtled toward the apex of the peak.
She said all Vog hate fire. They hate fire.
For the spiders, devouring life, devouring souls, they were as Vog as Erewhon, hailed from the same dark hell.
Get the flint from your pocket,
she ordered the prince.
And light what?
His eyes drifted to the arrows at her back as they halted atop the narrow apex of the peak. The curved horn.
We're trapped up here,
he scanned the sky.
It might not buy us anything.
Nezrin withdrew an arrow, shouldering her bow as she tugged a strip of her shirt from beneath the jacket of her flying leathers. She ripped off the bottom, sliced the piece in two, and wrapped one around the shaft of the arrow.
We need kindling,
she said, as Sartak withdrew the flint stone from his breast pocket. A knife flashed, and then a section of Sartak's braid was in his outstretched hand. She didn't hesitate, just wrapped the braid around the fabric, holding the arrow out for him as he struck the flint over and over. Sparks flew, drifting. One caught. Fire flared, just as darkness spilled into the pass below. Shoulder to shoulder, the spiders surged for them, two dozen at least. Nezrin knocked the arrow, drawing back the string, and aimed up. Not directly to them, but a shot into the sky, high enough to pierce the frosty stars. The spiders paused, watching the arrow reach its zenith, and then plunge down, down.
Another,
Nezrin said, taking that second strip of fabric and wrapping it again around the head of her next arrow. Only three remained in her quiver. Sartak sliced off a second piece of his braid, looping it over the tip. Flint struck, sparks glowed, and as that first arrow plummeted toward the spiders scattering from its path, she loosed her second arrow. The spiders were so distracted looking up, they did not stare ahead. The largest of them, the one who had spoken to her for so long, least of all. And as Nezrin's burning arrow slammed into her abdomen, sticking deep, the spider's scream shook the very stones beneath them.
Another,
Nezrin breathed, fumbling for her next arrow as Sartak ripped the fabric from his shirt.
Hurry!
Nowhere to go. No way to keep them at bay.
Shift,
she told Falcon, who monitored the panicking spiders, who balked at their leader's screaming orders to put out the fire atop her abdomen.
If you are going to shift into something, do it now.
The shifter turned that hideous spider's face toward them. Sartak sliced off another piece of his braid and slid it over the head of her third arrow.
I will hold them,
Falcon said. Sparks showered, flame kindled on that third flaming arrow.
A favor, Captain,
the shifter said to her.
Time. They did not have time. When I was 7, my older brother sired a bastard daughter off a poor woman in Rifthold. Abandoned them both. It has been 20 years since then. And from when I was old enough to go to the city, to begin my trade, I looked for her. Found the mother after some years on her deathbed. She could barely talk long enough to say she'd kicked the girl out. She did not know where my niece was, didn't care. She died before she could give me a name.
Nezrin's hands shook as she aimed the arrow toward the spider trying to edge past her burning sister. Sartak warned,
hurry.
Falcon said,
if she survived, if she is grown, she might have the shifter gift too. But it doesn't matter if she does or does not. What matters? She is my family. All I have left. And I have looked for her for a very long time.
Nezrin fired the third arrow. A spider screamed as it found its mark. The others fell back.
Find her,
Falcon said, taking a step toward the horrors churning below.
My fortune. All of it is for her. And I may have failed her in this life, but not in my death.
Nezrin opened her mouth, not believing it, the words surging up. But Falcon sprinted down the path, leaped right into the front of that burning line of spiders. Sartak grabbed her elbow, pointing toward the steep slope downward from the tiny peak.
This.
One moment, she was standing upright. The next, Sartak had thrown her back, his sword whining. She stumbled, arms flailing to keep her upright, as she realized what had crept up the other side of the peak. The spider now hissing at them, enormous fangs dripping venom to the stone. It lunged for Sartak with its front 2 legs. He dodged one and swung down, striking true. Black blood sprayed, the spider shrieking, but not before it slashed that claw deep into the prince's thigh. Nezrin moved, her fourth arrow flying, right into one of those eyes. The fifth and final arrow flew a moment later, shooting for the spider's open mouth, as it screamed. It bit down on the arrow, slicing it in half. Nezrin dropped her bow and drew her fey blade. The spider hissed at it. Nezrin stepped between Sartak and the spider. Down below, the Karen Kui screamed and shrieked. She did not dare to look to see what Falcon was doing. If he still fought, the blade was a sliver of moonlight between her and the spider. The Karen Kui advanced a step. Nezrin yielded one, Sartak struggling to rise beside her.
I will make you beg for death,
the spider seethed, advancing again. It recoiled, preparing to spring.
Make it count. Make the swing count.
The spider leaped and went tumbling off the cliff as a dark rook slammed into it, roaring her fury.
not Kadara, but Arcus, Borte.
Chapter 51.
A whirlwind of fury, Arcus reared up, then dove again. Borte's battle cry ringing off the stones, as she and Haruk aimed for the Karen Kui in the pass below. To the spider holding them off, blood, red blood leaking from him. Another cry split the night, one she'd learned as well as her own voice. And there was Kadara, sailing hard for them, two other Rooks in her wake. Sartak let out what might have been a sob as one of the other Rooks broke away, diving to where Borte swept and lunged and shattered through the Karen Kui ranks. A Rook of darkest brown feathers, and a young man atop it. Yeren. Nezrin did not recognize the other rider who sailed in behind Kadara. Blood stained Kadara's golden feathers, but she flew steady, hovering overhead as the other Rook closed in. "Hold still, and don't fear the drop," Sartak breathed, brushing a hand over Nezrin's cheek. In the moonlight, his face was caked in dirt and blood, his eyes full of pain. And yet, then there was a wall of wings, and mighty talons spread wide. They wrapped around her waist and beneath her upper thighs, hauling her sitting upright into the air. Sartak clutched in the other, and then the great bird shot into the night. The wind roared, but the Rook lifted them higher. Kadara fell into rank behind, guarding their rear. Through her whipping hair, Nezrin looked back toward the fire-limbed pass, to where Borte and Yeren now soared upward, a dark form clutched in the claws of Yeren's Rook, utterly limp. Borte was not done. A light sparked atop her Rook, a flaming arrow. Borte fired it high into the sky. A signal, Nezrin realized, as countless wings filled the air around them. And as Borte's arrow landed atop a web, flame erupting, hundreds of lights kindled in the sky. Rook riders, each bearing a flaming arrow, each now pointing downward. Like a rain of shooting stars, the arrows fell upon the darkness of Dagul, landed on web and tree, and caught fire, one after another, until the night was lit up, until smoke streamed, mingling with the rising screams from the peaks and wood. The Rooks veered northward, Nezrin shaking as she clung to the talons holding her. Across the way, Sartak met her gaze, his now shoulder-length hair rippling in the wind. With the flames below, it made the wounds to his face, his hands, his neck all the more gruesome. His skin was wan, his lips pale, his eyes heavy with exhaustion and relief. And yet, Sartak smiled, barely a curve of his mouth. The words the prince had confessed drifted on the wind between them. She could not take her eyes from him, could not look away. So Nezrin smiled back. And below and behind them, long into the night, the Dagul Fells burned.
Chapter 52. Kaol and Irene galloped back to Antica at dawn. They left a note for Hisar, claiming that Irene had a gravely ill patient who needed to be checked on, and raced across the dunes under the rising sun. Neither of them had slept much, but if what they'd guessed about the healers was true, they did not risk lingering. Kaol's back ached thanks to yesterday's ride, and last night's other ride. Multiple rides. And by the time the minarets and white walls of Antica appeared, he was hissing through his teeth. Irene frowned at him the entire painful trek through the packed streets to the palace. They hadn't discussed sleeping arrangements, but he didn't care if he had to walk up every single one of the stairs of the Torre, either her bed or his. The thought of leaving her, even for a heartbeat. Kaol winced as he climbed off Farasha. The black mare, suspiciously well-behaved, and accepted the cane the nearest stable hand had retrieved from Irene's mare. He managed a few steps toward her, his limp deep and splintering, but Irene held out a warning hand.
Do not think about attempting to lift me off this horse, or carry me, or anything.
He gave her a wry look, but obeyed. Anything? She turned a beautiful shade of scarlet as she slid off the mare, passing the reins to the waiting stable hand. The man sagged with relief, utterly grateful to not have the task of handling the impetuous Farasha, who was currently sizing up the poor man attempting to drag her toward the stables as if she'd have him for lunch. Hela's horse indeed.
Yes, anything,
Irene said, fluffing out her wrinkled clothes.
It's likely because of anything that you're limping worse than before.
Kaol let her fall into step beside him, and balanced on his cane long enough to press a kiss to her temple. He didn't care who saw, who reported on it. They could all go to hell, but behind them, he could have sworn Shen and the other guards were grinning from ear to ear. Kaol winked at her.
Then you'd better heal me, Irene Towers, because I plan to do a great deal of anything with you tonight.
She flushed even deeper, but angled her chin upward, prim and proper.
Let's focus on these scrolls first, you rogue.
Kaol grinned, broad and unrestrained, and felt it in every inch of his aching body as they strode back inside the palace. Any joy was short-lived. Kaol picked up on the humming threads of something amiss the moment they entered their quiet wing, the moment he saw the guards murmuring, the servants scurrying about. Irene only shared a glance with him, and they hurried along as fast as he could manage. Strands of fire shot along his back, down his thighs, but if something had happened... The doors to his suite were ajar, with two guards posted outside who gave him looks full of pity and dread. His stomach turned.
Nezrin. If she had come back, if something had happened with that Volg hunting them.
He stormed into the suite, his protesting body going distant, his head full of roaring silence. Nezrin's door was open. But no body lay sprawled on the bed, no blood stained on the carpet or splattered the walls. His room was the same, but both bedrooms... trashed. Shredded, as if some great wind had shattered the windows and torn through the space. The sitting room was worse. Their usual gold couch, gutted. The pictures, the art overturned or cracked or slashed. The desk had been looted, the carpets flipped over. Kaja was kneeling in the corner, gathering pieces of a broken vase.
Be careful, Irene hissed, striding to the girl as she plucked up pieces with her bare hands. Get a broom and dustpan rather than use your own hands.
Who did this?
Kaol asked quietly. Fear glimmered in Kaja's eyes as she rose.
It was like this when I came in this morning.
Irene demanded,
you didn't hear anything at all.
The sharp doubt in those words made him tense. Irene hadn't trusted the servant girl for an instant, making up tasks that would keep her away. But for Kaja to do this...
With you gone, my lord, I took the night to visit my parents.
He tried not to cringe.
A family.
She had a family here, and he'd never bothered to ask.
And can your parents swear to the fact that you were with them all night?
Kaol whirled.
Irene...
Irene didn't so much as glance at him as she studied Kaja. The servant girl withered under that fierce stare.
But I suppose leaving the door unlocked for someone would have been smarter.
Kaja cringed, shoulders curving inward.
Irene, this could have been from anything. Anyone.
Yes, anyone, especially someone who was looking for something.
The words clicked at the same moment the disarray of the room did. Kaol faced the servant girl.
Don't clean any more of the mess. Everything in here might offer some proof of who did this.
He frowned.
How much did you manage to clean already?
From the state of the room, not much.
I only just started.
I thought you wouldn't return until tonight, so I didn't...
It's fine. At her cringe, he added, go to your parents. Take the day off, Kaja. I'm glad you weren't here when this...